12 days had passed since the press conference. 12 days that turned Peter Parker's life inside out. Aunt May had been hounded by reporters, forced to hole up inside her house. People shouted traitor at Peter in the streets. The Daily Bugle filed suit against him for misrepresentation and breach of contract, citing the amount he'd been paid for Spider-Man action photos over the years. And a visit to Peter's old high school turned into a nightmare when Dr. Octopus crashed his guest lecture on physics. Thankfully, no students or faculty were hurt, but Principal Dillon had made it very clear that no further alumni lectures would be welcome. Since then, sleep hadn't come easily. And then there was Goliath and that horrible moment that Peter couldn't get out of his mind. So Spider-Man practically sleepwalked through the trip with Tony and Reed. SHIELD had cordoned off several Midtown blocks with trucks and paddy wagons for what Tony referred to as prisoner transfer. Inside the building, in Reed Richards' lab, the Negative Zone portal hummed with life, lights dancing along its metallic edge.
Project 42 Gateway, active.
Inside, an unearthly nebula blazed, haloed all around by stars and asteroids.
Your costume will protect you. Just strap on this grav pack for maneuvering.
Spider-Man shrugged on the metallic backpack. It was surprisingly light. He pointed into the portal.
That's where the prison is?
Detention center. Reed, the access code, please. Reed?
Oh, yes, of course. Sending the code to your armor, Tony.
Got it. You know what to do when SHIELD arrives, right?
Again, Reed didn't answer. He'd been very quiet on the trip over as well.
The fabulous Negative Zone. We just walk through?
Follow me.
Passing through the portal was like nothing Peter had ever felt before. First his arms, then his head, then his torso and legs. All of them felt inverted somehow. The process wasn't painful, but he did find it disturbing. Then he was inside, and the portal was gone. All around him stretched Negative Zone space, vast and bright, filled with objects of all sizes and shapes. Stars, jagged asteroids, distant planets. It looked like deep space, if someone had pumped deep space full of extra matter and lined it with hidden funhouse mirrors to distort the distances involved. Tony hovered just before Peter.
Weird, right? You get used to it.
It felt like I was being turned inside out.
That's pretty close to what happens.
How can that be? How does that possibly, conceivably not kill us?
I asked Reed that once. He launched into some elaborate quantum physics explanation I couldn't follow. Then he stopped in mid-sentence, and this funny little grin crept over his face. He didn't know either. He didn't know.
Tony gestured toward a cluster of asteroids and took off toward them. Spider-Man followed, activating the grav pack via his costume's controls.
SHIELD is preparing to transfer prisoners. I guess that means the guys we captured at the chemical plant?
Correct.
So that's how this is gonna work. Anybody who doesn't register gets brought to the Baxter building and shipped in here?
Only temporarily. Reed first discovered the Negative Zone. Right now, the only portal on Earth is the one we just came through in his laboratory. But Stark Enterprises is already building portals in major prisons all over the country. And once those are operational, violators of the Superhuman Registration Act will be dealt with like any other criminals, processed by proper authorities, then transferred here.
You forgot given a fair trial.
There are no trial provisions in the SRA, Peter.
What?
You don't give an atomic bomb a fair trial, or an enemy combatant on the field of battle. Altering course, follow my lead.
An asteroid loomed closer, one jagged rock among many. Buildings gleamed on its surface, reflecting the starlight. Spider-Man peered at it for a moment and began to feel queasy.
Follow me down, Peter, and don't deviate from the flight plan. Peter?
The structures on the asteroid's surface were clearly visible now, jutting up like man-made building blocks, but something about them seemed very odd. Their configuration seemed to shift, flashing frighteningly from one arrangement to another. Spider-Man stared at them, felt a twinge of panic with every shift. His gut, his hindbrain screamed. This architecture was inhuman, twisted, wrong.
Sorry. Set your lenses to filter 18. Strength level one notch below maximum.
What?
Never mind. I'll do it for you.
The buildings had stopped shifting. They rose like a futuristic city now, gleaming and majestic against the bare rock of the asteroid. Far below, guards in full armor patrolled the perimeter of the land and soared around the highest spires.
Security protocol Reed worked out. It uses a specially designed architectural configuration in combination with the unique properties of the negative zone to create a virtually escape-proof environment.
Spider-Man hovered and stared down at the cluster of spires. He contemplated the effect they'd had on him just seconds ago.
So what's with the guards? Are they protected?
Actually, most of them are robots.
Tony led him down to a landing pad, out where the gleaming metal of the complex petered out onto bare rock. Three robot guards approached, pulse rifles protruding from their arms.
Guard post Bravo, recognizing Anthony Stark. Identify second humanoid.
Spider-Man, real name Peter Parker, guest of Anthony Stark.
Confirmed. Registration on file.
The guard's face was blank, lights dancing behind its black glass plating.
Present access code, please.
Tango, Sierra, Lloyd Bridges.
Access code confirmed.
The guards moved aside. Tony led Spider-Man on foot toward a seemingly featureless silver wall. A door irised open, 20 feet high and almost as wide.
Lloyd Bridges.
A custom-designed app randomly generates new passwords every half hour. The app has an unanticipated fondness for the names of 1960s TV actors. Yesterday it was Charlie Foxtrot Adam West.
They passed through a large corridor into a courtyard where baby plants sprouted from transplanted earth soil. Spider-Man craned his neck, looking up at the featureless skyscrapers all around. The scope of the place was incredible. Ceilings, buildings, everything seemed larger than life. And very new, very metallic, totally antiseptic.
You said most of the guards are robots?
There are some human medical personnel and administrators to make sure nothing goes wrong, but Reed and I discussed the matter at length, and we decided the more we minimize the possibility of human error, the better this place would work.
He held up his gauntleted hand, and a heavy door opened.
And here are the apartments.
You mean the cells?
Semantics.
The hallway was lined with thick, angular metal doors, each with a small slit of one-way glass embedded at eye level. Spider-Man went to the first door. He lifted a hand to take his mask off.
Careful. You take off your lenses, the disorientation effect will hit you again. It works everywhere inside the prison except within the cells themselves.
Gotcha.
He leaned over to peer through the glass. The inside looked like any sparely appointed living room anywhere. Sofa, flat-screen TV, desk with a built-in computer monitor. A small fold-up bunk sat mounted against one wall, and Spider-Man could see the edge of a kitchen alcove in the background. The only oddity, a large armchair with wrist restraints and a helmet hanging above it.
Gotta admit, it looks nicer than my first apartment. Bigger, too. What's that chair thingy?
Virtual reality system. Lets them take little mind vacations, even when they're trapped in here. We may have to modify it, of course, for villains with tech manipulation abilities.
I don't see anybody inside.
The facility has only just become operational. Very few of the cells are occupied.
Tony cocked his head, consulting some internal data file.
Ah, try this one.
Spider-Man crossed to the next cell and peered through the glass. A waterfall of sand dropped down before his eyes, landing on a heaped pile of clothing on the floor of the cell. The sand gathered, began to form, and rose up from the floor. It filled out a muscle shirt and jeans, arranging into the unmistakable form of Spider-Man's old foe, the Sandman.
Right. We caught him a couple weeks ago, with the Sinister Six.
You caught him. That was good work.
Inside, Sandman picked up a remote control and plopped down on the sofa.
Looks kind of sad.
Sad? He's in prison. People like Sandman are too dangerous to be allowed to walk around. You know that.
I'm not arguing about him, but a lot of my friends are going to wind up here too. Our friends. They'll be locked up same as him.
All their needs will be seen to. They'll be comfortable.
But they can't leave.
Of course they can. The minute they agree to register, to go public with their identities and follow the laws of the United States of America, to follow the courageous example you showed back at the press conference.
Spider-Man felt a low, familiar rumble in his head, the ache that had kept him awake these past several nights.
Come on. The shield shuttle should be arriving about now.
Spider-Man's head was swimming. Those buildings rose up 100, maybe 150 stories. How many people would this place hold, ultimately? How long would they stay here? How much had it cost to build? Outside, the shield shuttle was just arcing into a landing. It looked like an airborne version of the mobile buses, thick and heavy, with rocket tubes mounted on all four corners of its stern. A pair of SHIELD agents strode out, in full riot gear and protective goggles.
Present access code, please.
Echo Delta Julie Newmar.
Access code confirmed.
I like that code.
Two more agents led Cloak out onto the landing pad. The young man wore his full costume, but with manacles at his wrists and ankles. A thick helmet was clamped on his head, stretching down to cover his eyes.
Power dampener. It also shields him from the distortion effect.
Wiccan and Hulkling stumbled out next, similar helmets covering their eyes.
They've been assigned a double apartment, together. We're not trying to punish anyone, Peter. This is about containment.
A tall, thickly built agent brought up the rear, escorting the red-garbed figure of Daredevil. He walked easily, confidently despite his fetters. When he reached Tony and Spider-Man's position, he stopped and turned straight toward them, despite the helmet covering his eyes. His radar sense, Spider-Man guessed. The dampener must not have been stopping it completely.
Tony Stark himself. Here to admire your handiwork? Impressive. Built by Stark Enterprises, right? The government's really been handing out those no-bid contracts. How many millions have you made this month?
Shut up and move, Murdoch.
It's all right, Agent. I'd like to talk to Daredevil while you bring him in.
Daredevil turned blind, hooded eyes to Tony, then marched toward the door. Tony fell in beside him, and Spider-Man followed.
Daredevil, is it Matt? Never mind. I want you to understand why we're doing this. I assure you, I don't take any pleasure in hunting down my friends. I sat there in Washington on Capitol Hill and I watched them debate this issue from every side. And in the end, it came down to two choices. Registration or a total ban on all superhero activity. And I think you'd agree, none of us wants that. You've heard of the 50-state initiative? It's real. It's happening. Eventually, there'll be 50 super teams, one in each state. Every member trained, licensed, and accountable to the U.S. taxpayer. It's the next stage in superhuman evolution. We're already training new superheroes and working to find a place for anyone who wants to join us. If you're interested, if you want to come clean to register and go public right now, you'd be at the top of my list. You could even have your own team. Call the shots. What do you say?
They'd reached the cell block. The SHIELD agent lifted an access card.
Otherwise, this is the alternative. And nobody wants that either.
Agent Chang, would you give it to him, please?
Give it to me?
Yeah. When we processed him, we found this under his tongue. We tested it, it's harmless, but he said he was saving it for you.
A silver dollar? I don't understand.
That's 31 pieces of silver you've got now, Judas.
Then he turned and strode into the cell.
Come on.
Spider-Man lingered for a moment, gazing at the cell that held his longtime friend. And slowly, Spider-Man realized what the ache in his mind was. Spider-sense. Not like he'd known it before. A sharp shock warning him of imminent danger. This was lower, steadier, more constant. A different kind of alarm entirely. The feeling that things had gone very wrong and were about to get even worse.
My darling Reed, first off, I wanted to let you know that Johnny's doing better. The stitches came out yesterday, and he's been happily recuperating at the penthouse apartment of someone named Marika. Same old Johnny. I know I should be happy, but I'm not. I'm so ashamed of you right now, Reed. And I'm ashamed of myself for going along, for passively supporting your fascistic plans. That's why I'm leaving.
The suitcase lay on the bed, half packed. It was small, carry-on size, with little wheels, barely enough space inside for a change of clothes and toiletries, and a well-worn blue superhero costume. Somehow the costume still fit, even after two children and dozens of supervillain battles. Sue smiled. Had to be the unstable molecules. She'd had to sneak into her own home, past the SHIELD blockade. If Reed were to check the entry logs, he'd see that she'd entered her passcode, and of course the security cameras would record the outer door opening briefly, then shutting. It wouldn't show anyone entering, of course, because no one had. At least, no one visible. But Reed was distracted. Very, very distracted. even more so than usual. Right now, one floor above, he and Tony Stark were overseeing the transfer of the captured Resistance members to that horror show they built in the Negative Zone. Once Sue was inside the building, she hadn't felt the need to stay invisible. Reed would never notice her. These days, he had no time for anyone, except Tony. In the top bureau drawer, she felt around for her old, disused communicator. She found it, a bulky walkie-talkie device with a 4 etched onto it. She tossed it onto the bed next to the suitcase, and then her eyes stopped on something else, lying in the back of the drawer.
Oh, my.
She pulled it out, held it up to the light. A model rocket ship. And not just any rocket. A replica of the privately built ship that Ben Grimm had piloted out of the desert that fateful night. The night that Sue, Reed, Ben, and Johnny braved the cosmic ray belt at the edge of Earth's atmosphere and were transformed into the Fantastic Four. She'd almost forgotten this model. Reed had built it for her on their first wedding anniversary. The paint job was meticulous, down to the silver detailing on the old-style rocket tubes. The tinted cockpit even showed 4 little silhouettes inside. She remembered thinking it was possibly the worst anniversary gift in history. And that had made her love Reed even more. She turned to the baby monitor on the night table and switched it on.
Hey, it's my turn!
I think not. Yours was a choice last time. Tell him, Herbie.
Herbie was the kid's robot babysitter.
Now, if you children can't agree, I shall make the decision.
Sue heard a noise just past the doorway.
Herbie, you don't...
She willed herself invisible, then thought better of it and faded back into view. It was pointless to hide. If Reed didn't already know she was here, the half-packed suitcase would be a dead giveaway.
Susie?
The figure in the doorway was bigger, bulkier than Reed. Then she saw what Ben Grimm was holding, his own suitcase.
Please understand, darling. This is not a cry for attention. This is not me trying to distract you from your all-important work. This is because your hands, both our hands, are soaked in Bill Foster's blood. And you're so blinded by your graphs and projections and doomsday scenarios that you can't even see it. Today I broke the law. I helped a team of wanted felons escape duly deputized federal forces. Those felons happened to be some of our closest friends who fell into those forces' clutches out of a pure desire to help innocent people. But that doesn't seem to matter. Tony and his goon squad have their hands busy right now, licking their wounds and locking up prisoners and setting up their superhero training squads all over the country. If there's a scrap of decency left in them, I hope they're also putting together a funeral for poor Bill Foster. Sooner or later, though, they'll come after me for what I've done. They'll probably offer me amnesty because of your importance to Tony's plans. I don't want to put you in that position, but more importantly, I don't want their amnesty. I want to do what's right.
They stood together awkwardly for a moment, each staring at the other.
You're leaving?
You're leaving?
I have to, Ben. After today. But what about you? I don't... Are you going to join Captain America's group, too?
No.
He dropped the suitcase. What did he have in there? Spare rocks?
Susie, I took a long look around after the battle was over. At that chemical plant, there was toxic goo all over the floor, jagged glass and metal, not a wall left standing. Now, Tony had wrecked the place pretty good to start with as part of the trap. But I saw what we did. All of us. Fighting like starved rats in that little space. And I couldn't stop thinking, what if there'd been people around? What if one single civilian had sneaked past the barricades, a reporter maybe, and got himself crushed in between me and Luke Cage? Or under that big acid vat that Goliath dropped?
I know. Listen, I have a rendezvous scheduled.
No. I don't want to know. I ain't picking sides here. Far as I can tell, Caps is guilty in all this as Tony Stark.
What are you saying?
I'm saying the registration law is wrong. And I can't uphold a law I don't believe in.
That's what I'm...
But I'm still a patriot, Susie. I love my country. I ain't gonna fight the government or let that government brand me like a criminal. So the way I see it, I only got one choice. I'm leaving the country.
Oh.
France, I figure. At least till this is over.
He glanced at the night table, and his big blue eyes grew misty.
Oh, hey. Look at that.
Sue followed his gaze over to the model rocket.
We were the first.
Yeah. You ever regret it all, Susie?
What?
All of it. The rocket flight, the powers, falling big brain all over creation, into space, other dimensions. The freaking negative zone. The fights, the drama. You had a few other guys after you there for a while.
Ben.
You ever regret marrying him? Settling down?
I'm not sure I'd call this settled down.
That ain't an answer. I ain't seen one of those for a while.
Sue quickly snatched up the communicator.
One sec, Ben. Johnny?
You there, sis?
Hang on a minute, Johnny. Ben?
I gotta go, Susie. Good luck.
You... You too, you big goof.
Just do me one favor, okay? Stay away from Atlantis.
Sis? I can barely hear you.
Hold on, Johnny.
But when Sue turned back toward the door, Ben was gone.
You won't hear from Johnny for a while either, Reed. I'll take care of him, the way I've always done. But where we're going, I can't take Franklin and Valeria. So I'm leaving them in your care. And I beg you, darling, please find time for them, the time you've so often denied them in the past. I also didn't want your last memory of me to be tainted with all the fights we've had in the past few weeks. I'm glad we made love last night, and I want you to know it was amazing. It was always amazing. Fantastic, even.
Sis, we haven't used these communicators in years. Where'd you even find them?
I couldn't risk cell phones, Johnny. Tony Stark can see through satellites these days, but I don't think anyone uses this frequency anymore.
You always were the brains of the family. Well, our family. What's our next move?
Where are you? Still at Marika's?
Martika. Yeah, it's...
No, don't even tell me. Let's meet in half an hour, say, outside the Blazer Club. Nobody'll expect to see us there again.
Scene of the crime. I like it.
Be inconspicuous, but no stupid disguises. Leave the fake nose and glasses at home.
Aw, sis. The ladies love that one.
I gotta go, Johnny. See you soon. I love you.
You're such a girl.
Sue turned back to the baby monitor. She should go see the kids one last time. This was going to be hard on them. But she knew if she did that, she wouldn't leave. She picked up the rocket model, hefted it in her hand, held it over the suitcase.
No.
She turned away and placed it carefully back in the bureau drawer.
I'll be back. I hope.
And she zipped up the suitcase and turned invisible.
I hope I don't look like a coward for leaving this way. I hope you don't think I'm a bad wife, or even worse, a bad mother. I'm doing this for the best of reasons. Tony Stark's crusade was born out of noble intentions, I know that. But I also know, deep in my heart, that it will not lead anywhere good. You're the smartest person I know, Reed. And I hope, I pray, that your genius can resolve this situation before one side ends up slaughtering the other. I love you, darling, more than anything in the world. Please, fix this. Susan.
Peter, I tell you, I'm fine. Nobody has threatened me. Nobody's... Peter, where are we going?
Peter glanced at the map on his phone, then leaned forward.
Take the next right.
It's not that I love having policemen outside the house all the time, but they've been very nice.
They're not policemen, Aunt May. They're S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
Either way, Mr. Smarty, that doesn't explain why I had to pack up my things and sneak out past them. And what are we doing in Brooklyn?
This block, sir.
I think so. Slow down.
Like many New York neighborhoods, Fort Greene had come up a lot over the past decade. Rows of old brownstone buildings had been cleaned, refaced, and restored to their 19th century splendor.
Peter!
Just a minute, Aunt May, please. It should be the next one on the... Whoa.
Whoa it is.
Aunt May clutched at Peter's shoulder now. He turned to smile at her and gently removed her fingers. Most of the block was lined with concrete sidewalks and plain iron railings, but in front of one particular building, the sidewalk had been replaced with elegant old-fashioned flagstones. Plants grew everywhere, inside the fence, along the sidewalk, lining the steps leading to the main entrance. A young maple tree sprouted from a square cut into the walk, dirt still mounted around its base. Peter frowned, double-checked the address.
Peter! Didn't I teach you to help a lady with her bag?
Sorry. Here you go. Keep the change.
Thanks, buddy.
He led Aunt May up the steps in a daze. His heart was pounding. This wasn't going to be easy, and the appearance of the house made him feel like he'd stepped into some mirror world.
Oh, my God.
Mary Jane.
She answered the door in jeans spotted with dirt and grass stains, a casual shirt tied up at her lovely waist. Her long red hair was tousled, a hint of sweat on her brow. She held a trowel in one hand. They stood together for an awkward moment, staring at each other. Then Aunt May pushed past him, her arms wide.
Dear, it's been too long.
Still stunned, Mary Jane reached out and hugged the older woman, but her gaze stayed on Peter.
Good to see you, Aunt May. Why don't you sit down and have some tea? I think your nephew and I need to talk.
MJ's backyard was, if anything, even more impressive than the front. It was vast, covered with green. Bushes, tomato plants, neatly tended rows of flowers. A carriage house stood beyond with an arched glass-tiled roof. She'd converted it into a greenhouse.
This place is... it's really something, MJ.
Yeah. It's largely self-sustaining, Tiger. The walls are insulated with recycled denim. There's solar panels on the roof. The roof garden helps keep the place warm in the winter and prevents toxic water runoff. I'm thinking about drilling a geothermal well, but that takes a lot of permits.
Don't take this the wrong way, MJ, but this doesn't sound like you.
An actor friend did something similar in Clinton Hill, told me about it. But I guess, really, I just needed a project. Something that was really mine. After
I left you at the altar.
You mean Spider-Man did? Guess that's a secret I don't have to keep anymore.
I would have married you. I mean, that thug had me unconscious during our scheduled wedding. But afterward, any day, any time.
After the wedding debacle, she'd fled town, refused to speak to him for 2 weeks. He tried everything to make it right. Flowers, gifts, handwritten notes, tearful video apologies. When she'd finally agreed to talk, he assumed she'd finally forgiven him. But her answer was clear and definite. She would never marry Spider-Man. And Spider-Man, he'd discovered, wasn't something he could give up. She waved him off now, a bit of the old smirk creeping onto her face. She crossed to a long bench made out of a single log and plopped down on it, stretching out her long legs. Her shirt rode up a bit more, revealing that incredible stomach. No wonder she was still getting gigs at Vogue and on VH1. She looked amazing.
So, Tiger, couldn't call first? Too busy making headlines?
He perched awkwardly on the edge of the bench.
I don't really trust the phones right now.
Oh, that sounds good and paranoid. Hang on. All this publicity. Has somebody threatened Aunt May? Is that why you brought her here?
No. Not yet.
I saw the Doc Ock thing on the news. Tiger, didn't you think about this stuff before you revealed your identity on national TV?
I did. Really, I did. And somebody promised to keep her safe, but...
But what?
But I'm not sure I trust that person anymore.
We're not kids anymore, Peter. Knock off the guessing games.
Tony. It's Tony Stark.
Tony Stark? The richest man we know, the guy who's now basically in charge of all superhero activity in the country. Don't you think he can handle keeping your aunt safe?
It's not a question of handle. It's just...
Watch those geraniums. They're just starting to bloom.
There's a lot of weird stuff going on, MJ. Did you hear about the hero who died yesterday? Bill Foster?
Goliath, right? The news reported it, but they didn't give too many details.
That's because Tony doesn't want to tell people how it happened. That Bill got impaled by a lightning bolt shot off by a defective clone of Thor that Tony's guys grew as a part of their new hero team.
Oh, I think I just had a little stroke.
I keep seeing it. Blood spurting out of Bill's back. His huge body tumbling like an oak, you know? And that's not all. It's only the beginning. Tony's also got a prison for metahumans. This weird, antiseptic fortress run by robots. It's not even on Earth. It's in some weird dimension called the Negative Zone.
He could feel himself starting to break down, the barriers falling. Something about this place, about seeing MJ again. He'd never been as close to anyone as he'd been to her.
They're supposed to be. Tony wants 50 super teams, one for every state. I mean, it's all top secret right now, but I've seen some of the names he's trying to recruit. You can't fill out 50 teams without signing up some pretty unstable people.
Peter.
And Captain America? There's no better man in the world, but I stood there and I watched Tony just pound the crap out of him, beat him to a bloody pulp. I'm not squeamish, MJ. You know that. I've seen things, but this was just wrong. It was... Damn it. Stupid pollen. You got too many plants out here, you know that?
And then she was there, directly in front of him, her lovely dark eyes boring into his, challenging him, just as she'd done when they were kids. She smelled of skin and earth and strawberry perfume. Her lips were slightly parted. He moved forward to kiss her. But she held out a hand and pushed him away.
So, what are you going to do?
Sorry.
Peter looked down.
Tony's a good man. He's done so much for me, for a lot of people.
But you think he's gone too far.
I'm just going to talk to him. He and me, we think alike. He said so.
You don't sound sure.
I'm not sure of anything. Well, one thing. Just one.
He pulled her close, hugged her like a sister, buried his head in her shoulder.
You're the only person in the world that I really, truly trust. I need you to take her away, to keep her safe.
Safe from what?
From nothing, hopefully, but if this doesn't go the way I hope, if he doesn't see...
Damn it, Petey! You expect me to uproot my whole life and leave my house that I just finally got the way I want it?
I know, but it's...
After everything that's...
I can't let her be hurt. Not because of...
Because of Spider-Man.
Yes.
Is everything all right out here? Oh, I see more of the old drama. Well, don't mind little me. Oh my, Mary Jane, what lovely posies you have.
Aunt May sputtered and protested, but when all was said and done, she nodded, set her mouth, and allowed Mary Jane to lead her to the car. In the end, as she'd said, she trusted Peter. Peter stood on the sidewalk, watching Mary Jane's car recede down the street. She'd barely said a word to him while packing, but he knew that she, too, understood.
I wonder when I'll see them again.
Was it all sliding off a cliff? Tony Stark couldn't tell. Public opinion had turned against registration somewhat after the chemical plant debacle. The latest polls were split pretty evenly. The defection of Susan Richards was a problem too, one that he'd have to deal with eventually. And the international community wasn't happy. European Union leaders had been making speeches nonstop against the new policy, happy to have something to take attention off their own failing economies. Wakanda, the African nation that supplied Stark Enterprises with the valuable element vibranium, was considering cutting off all diplomatic relations with the United States. The sunken nation of Atlantis was another potential problem, since one of the dead new warriors had been a daughter of their royal family. Prince Namor, ruler of Atlantis, had once staged a full-scale invasion of the surface world. Not much had been seen of Namor in recent years, nor of the enigmatic blue-skinned Atlanteans. Tony hoped that Namor's legendary temper had cooled with time. The X-Men had practically walled themselves up in their school. Maria Hill was ready to assault the gates full-on with S.H.I.E.L.D. shock troops, but Tony had persuaded her to hold off. The X-Men's relationship with the larger hero community had always been uneasy. They wouldn't give in easily to an invasion. The result would be a bloodbath all around. But Hill was right about one thing. For registration to work, a critical mass of heroes had to comply. Otherwise, the whole process would backfire. Instead of taking control of the problem, Tony and S.H.I.E.L.D. would seem helpless, ineffectual. And that would pave the way for more repressive, hostile forces to step in. On the positive side, the training camps were really coming together. Intel continued to stream in from inside Cap's resistance, Project Thunderbolt had entered its alpha test phase, and slowly but surely, more heroes were registering.
Just over this hill, Happy.
Tony ducked farther under Happy Hogan's big umbrella. Rain sheeted down all around, painting the cemetery in grays and browns.
Whoa.
The hole was 11 feet wide by 30 feet long, and at least 20 feet deep. Industrial cranes slowly lowered the wrapped, manacled body of Goliath down toward the ground. People stood watching, grouped uncomfortably in twos and threes. Ms. Marvel and the Black Widow stood together. Carol looked tall and elegant in a gray suit, while Natasha wore a black trench coat. Reed Richards wore a corduroy jacket and tie, with his arms protectively around Franklin and Valeria, his two children. They looked puzzled and uncomfortable in formal clothes.
Reed brought the kids?
Yeah, I didn't want to leave them with the robots all day. There was nobody else left at the Baxter building.
An older black couple held each other. The woman met Tony's eyes for a moment, glaring at him. He looked away.
Bill's parents.
This must be rough for them. Especially since you couldn't shrink the body down again.
Hank Pym's on leave right now, but I called him and he said it couldn't be done. Something about electrical brain activity and organic tissue decay.
I wonder how much the family had to shell out for, what, 38 burial plots?
Nothing. I took care of the expenses. Least I could do. God, Happy. Is this all worth it? Do I have the right to do this?
Stark?
Maria Hill's voice in his Bluetooth earpiece made Tony jump. He turned away from the grave.
What?
I got a few people for you to meet.
Damn it, Maria. Let me get Bill Foster into the ground first.
Tony looked around.
Where the hell is Peter Parker?
Tony?
Reed. Thanks for coming. Hey, Franklin. Valeria.
Happy crouched down, tried to ruffle Franklin's hair. The boy turned away and hid behind his father's leg. Reed held a wet slip of paper, clenching his fist around it.
What's that?
Huh? Oh, nothing.
Reed hurriedly stashed the paper in a pocket, but Tony caught a quick glimpse of the signature at the bottom. Susan.
Reed, this is a rough patch. We'll get through it. We're doing the right thing.
Daddy, my shoes are growing sodden.
See you at the Baxter building tonight. S.H.I.E.L.D. has a new batch of prisoners.
Of course.
The cranes released their burden. The enormous body of Goliath settled to rest.
Mr. Stark?
Mrs. Sharp. I'm sorry, I haven't had time to...
No, don't worry about it. I just came by because I know you guys lost a lot of support in the superhero community after...
She gestured at the gravesite.
I wanted to say my piece. Goliath knew what he was doing. And what he was doing was breaking a law designed to save people's lives. If he'd only gone legitimate, he'd still be alive. This isn't your fault. No more than a cop could be blamed for shooting a punk who pulls a gun on him.
Mrs. Sharp.
Shh. I also wanted to give you this.
She reached into her purse.
It was my son Damien's favorite toy since he was 3 years old.
Tony took the toy, stared at it through the rain. A 6-inch Iron Man action figure. Tony looked up at her, completely lost for words.
Just to remind you why you're doing this.
He touched her shoulder, a wordless thank you. Then he turned away, still clutching the toy figure.
Maria, talk to me.
About time, Stark. Meet me at the west entrance, but be prepared. Your little funeral has stirred up some of the natives.
Night was just falling as Tony ducked his head and trotted through the cemetery gate, passing between two lines of demonstrators.
Fascist!
Cape killer!
One side hated him because he was a superhero. The other side was cheering because he was an authority figure.
Keep us safe!
State troopers had erected sawhorses to keep both groups back, but the cops looked nervous. Tony stopped to address a trooper.
You have enough men here?
National Guard's on the way. We can hold out till then.
Stark?
The SHIELD Mobile Command Center sat parked along the street, jutting out into the first lane of traffic. A line of guards surrounded it.
On my way.
Inside the war room, two newcomers waited. Hawkeye stood grimacing in full purple costume, his bow lying on a table nearby. With him was a tall blonde girl in red and black, wearing a domino mask. Tony frowned for a moment, not recognizing her.
This is Stature, formerly of the Young Avengers.
Of course. And Hawkeye, good to have you back, Clint. I know it can't have been an easy decision.
Hardest I've ever made, Tony.
I know. Your head knows the right thing to do, but your heart just wants things to stay the way they've always been.
Yeah, but we're living in a different world now. Guess it took Goliath dying to make me realize that.
Tony studied the bowman for a minute, then turned to face Stature.
What about you? Cassie, right? This is a huge step you're taking here.
I know that. My teammates don't understand.
But you do.
People want us to be properly trained, sir. It's not the 1940s anymore.
That's the truth.
All I want is to do my job to the best of my abilities.
Tony nodded slowly. This was good news, two more recruits, and yet something nagged at him.
We got a lot to go over, Stark, starting with Project Thunderbolt.
Just a moment, Maria.
What? You don't trust me, Tone?
Believe me, Hawk, there's parts of this operation I don't tell myself about.
Right. Stathis, Roberg, take the new recruits back to the city by limo. You can fill them in on procedures along the way.
Roger.
Hawkeye shouldered his bow and followed the agent to the door. He paused and shot Tony a last glance. Pissed off? Or was he pulling a scam and wondering if it hadn't worked?
You think Cap's trying to put a mole in your operation.
We've got one in his, don't we? And Hawkeye owes a lot to Captain America. Any sightings of Spider-Man today?
Ellis, run the Cape search protocol. Subject, Peter Parker.
Last sighting yesterday, 1834 hours, outside the Baxter building.
That's right after I left him. Nothing after that?
Not in costume, sir. The civilian ID subroutines aren't up and running yet.
Hap, you've got the suit, right?
Got the briefcase right here.
Good. Maria, I hope you won't mind me changing in front of you.
I've seen it before.
Agent Ellis's head snapped up in surprise.
Back to work, mister.
What's up, Mr. Stark?
I think I've got a big problem, Hap.
Tony snapped open the briefcase.
And it's time I took care of it.
Got it. Okay, thanks. Be there in half an hour.
Sue Richards hung up the payphone and turned back to her brother. Johnny was dressed in jeans and a jacket. A large bandage poked out from under his baseball cap, but he looked much healthier than the last time she'd seen him.
Falcon gave me the address. It's in Harlem.
I can fly us.
Cut that out! SHIELD's got eyes everywhere.
She looked around, suddenly paranoid.
Well, just hoof it.
Yes, big sister. Well, at least the rain stopped.
Sue started off up 11th Avenue. She and Johnny had gone straight to the Resistance's former headquarters, only to find it boarded up and abandoned. For a terrible moment, Sue had thought Tony had rounded them all up. But no, they had just relocated.
How's Reed doing?
Well, you know that thing he does when he gets totally wrapped up in a project?
No idea what you're talking about.
This is like that times 10. He and Tony Stark are... they're like two kids in a candy store. No, we're like two kids building their own giant candy store with every kind of candy in the world under their absolute control.
Are we still talking about candy? Because you're making me hungry.
She stopped under a street lamp and turned to look at Johnny. Since she was 15, Sue had taken care of him. Now he was all grown up, a handsome young man, living his own life.
Johnny, I have to do this. I made my choice when I helped the Resistance escape from Tony's thugs, but...
Don't, sis.
But you don't. You can still come in from the cold. Go turn yourself in.
Johnny pulled her into a dark alcove next to the outer door of a disused building. When they were hidden from the street, he held up a flaming finger to the brick wall. He traced the letter A in the air, leaving an after-image trail before Sue's eyes.
A
Registration, so far, has gotten me nothing but a fractured head bone. B, Tony Stark is a rich jerk.
Well, go ahead. What's C?
C is that my sister and I have always faced tough situations together, and I would never abandon her. Never.
You hear?
Yeah, inside the building.
He lit his whole hand on fire and ran it across the wall like a flashlight. The windows were boarded, the bricks chipped with decay and neglect. But the door, a big padlock on a chain, lay on the ground, picked and discarded.
Help! Douse your light.
Sue reached out, turning them both invisible. She stepped past him and started inside, holding up her hand to generate a protective force field in front of them. They felt their way down a dark, dusty corridor. No power was on, not even emergency lights.
Help me! What are you doing?
The corridor opened onto a disused loading bay. The door was missing. High ceilings, the smell of gunpowder and old newspapers. A single light shone from a portable electric lantern placed right in the center of the floor. On a large support beam stretching from floor to ceiling, a man had been strung up tight with heavy cord. The lantern illuminated him from below, casting giant, rapidly jerking shadows on the ceiling.
Why? Why? What do you want?
The man's briefcase lay open on the floor, papers spilling out in a fan pattern. Tablet computer 2, a long crack along its screen. A few feet away, his tormentor crouched down, cleaning a big hunting knife. Muscular arms, thick legs, a fierce brow. A skull pattern on his shirt.
That's the Punisher!
Yeah.
Is he registered?
I sincerely doubt it.
The Punisher's head whipped up. For a moment, he stared straight at the corridor entrance. His cold eyes seemed to bore into them.
We're still invisible, right?
Sue nodded sharply and raised a finger to her lips. The Punisher frowned, swept the room with his eyes. Then he turned back to his work. He pulled a fresh whetstone out of his bag. Sue motioned Johnny forward, and they crept silently into the room. The Punisher was a vigilante, a killer known for taking down mafia bosses in a very permanent way. After his family had been murdered in a mob hit, he'd sworn revenge against all organized crime. The man on the beam struggled against his bonds. Sue studied him. He wore a white button-down shirt, crisply pressed slacks, and a loosened tie. This was no mob boss, not even one who'd gone legit. This was a businessman. Without facing his victim, the Punisher held up the knife and studied its blade against the lantern light.
Wilton Bainbridge Jr. They call you Wilt, don't they?
Yeah, Wilt.
Punisher turned to him, holding up the blade.
Well, Wilt, we need to have a conversation.
A conversation? Oh, yeah. I'm not going anywhere.
You're a banker, right, Wilt?
Yeah.
And you sit on a lot of boards of directors, too.
I guess.
Like Roxxon International.
Uh-huh.
Roxxon's developing a lot of tech for the government these days. Oh, not as much as Stark is. But there's plenty of contracts to go around. And some of those involve technology that could be used to interfere with my business.
Your business?
That's right.
Punisher held up the knife an inch from the squirming man, running it through the air, from his stomach down to his crotch.
So I need you to tell me everything you know about something called the Cape Search Protocol.
The Cape Search? Oh, yeah, sure. That's easy. It's pattern recognition software, used to cross-check thousands of sources to locate any superhero or villain in the world. It's not really new. It's an adaptation of Homeland Security software already used in airport spot checks. The only wrinkle is it also detects use of metahuman powers. You know, like a freezing rays or gamma radiation.
Metahuman powers. Huh. Thanks, Wilt.
This is weird. The Punisher doesn't kidnap civilians. I've certainly never heard of him extorting information from them.
What about Project Thunderbolt?
What?
I thought at first it was a code name for that Thunder God monster that ran amok yesterday. But my sources tell me it's something different. Something very dangerous. What's Project Thunderbolt, Wilt?
I don't know.
Punisher turned murderous eyes on him. He held up the knife, pricked his own finger with it, didn't even flinch as blood flowed from the tiny cut.
I don't know! I've heard the name, but we didn't have anything to do with it. It's top secret, developed solely by S.H.I.E.L.D. and Stark Enterprises.
You don't know anything.
I don't, I swear!
Punisher turned back to his bag and pulled out a high-powered assault rifle.
Then I guess you're no more use to me, Wilt.
In the shadows, Johnny's grip tensed on Sue's shoulder.
So you're gonna kill me?
Punisher didn't answer. He pulled out a box of shells and emptied them into his hand.
I don't think you're gonna kill me. I know you. I know your rep. You don't just murder ordinary people in cold blood. You kill criminals, period.
Meticulously, Punisher loaded the shells into the rifle.
That's right. I kill criminals. Let me break it down for you, Wilt. 8 years ago, while in the employ of Terriman Gaston and Associates, you sold mortgages to several major national banks.
Yes, so?
You sold the same mortgages in several hundred cases to three or more different banks. Very, very lucrative.
You're gonna kill me for that? Everyone was doing it!
Among the mortgages you triple-dipped were a clutch of houses in a single development in Hialeah, Florida, just outside Miami. Ring any bells?
No, no.
Two different banks came in to foreclose on those houses. The residents were all first and second generation immigrants from Cuba, come here to start a new life. Suddenly, white guys in suits are at their doors repoing their rightly purchased homes with police backup. The Cubans were in no position to argue. Desperate, homeless, and starving, these immigrants banded together and began selling heroin. They faced some stiff competition at first, but they quickly learned to become ruthless and established a toehold in the greater Miami area. Do you know what you were doing at that time, Wilt?
I don't recall.
I'll jog your memory. You spent a chunk of your newfound profits on something called the Aphrodite Cruise, a seafaring orgy where high-priced prostitutes service wealthy businessmen against a backdrop of decadent Greek architecture. Nice work if you can get it, I suppose. Meanwhile, while you were snorting coke off the stomach of a stripper called Nemozyne, our Cuban friends enlisted a regular customer named Enrique. Enrique's habit made him erratic and unreliable, which caused him to lose his job. When his money dried up, the Cubans cut off his heroin supply. So Enrique decided to rob a taco place. The manager tried to be a hero and mowed Enrique down with a .30-06. But not before Enrique shot three random patrons in the head. One of those patrons was an African-American construction worker named James Victor Johnson.
What in the world are you talking about?
James Victor Johnson died 3 hours after the robbery. His sister tracked me down, told me the whole story. Well, half of it. Took some research to trace it all back to you.
And that's why you grabbed me?
That's why.
What about all the other stuff? About S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Cape Tech?
You're a resource, Wilt.
You're crazy! You're totally insane! You actually blame me for that guy's death? It's not my fault! You don't want me! You should be going to the creep who shot that guy, or the drug dealers, the thugs, the lowlifes who do that stuff!
Oh, I will.
Punisher leveled the rifle at his victim and peered through the sight.
But I like to start at the top.
Sue felt a blast of heat. Johnny had incinerated his outer clothing, arrowing through the air toward the Punisher. The Punisher looked up as a fireball struck his rifle.
Damn it.
Johnny circled around and came in for a landing between the Punisher and his victim.
The Human Torch. Working for Stark now, I see.
What?
You're not gonna take me in.
I'm here to stop you from killing people!
He's crazy! Lock him up!
The Punisher reached into his boot, pulled out a second knife, and threw it at Johnny. It struck his cheek, drawing blood. Johnny fell backward, instinctively flaming on again. Then, incredibly fast, the Punisher's boot was on his neck, pinning him down to the floor. Flames rose up from Johnny's struggling form, licking harmlessly at the Punisher's clothes.
Flameproof Kevlar. Douse the fire, kid. Now!
Still unseen, Sue started to creep forward.
Your invisible sister's here too, isn't she?
Punisher looked around.
Are you working with S.H.I.E.L.D.? How far away are they?
Sue looked up and saw the ceiling cave in, falling in huge fragments toward them. A huge chunk struck the top of Wilt's support beam, severing it from the ceiling. Sue reached out, extending her force field to cover all four of them. The Punisher hadn't moved an inch. He still stood with his foot on Johnny's throat. Slowly, he turned toward Sue, and she realized in the confusion, she'd let herself become visible. Wilt wriggled loose of his bonds. He scrambled around the inside of the force field trying to get away, but bounced off its edge. A huge searchlight stabbed down through the hole in the roof. Up above, four heavy-duty shield copters hovered.
Francis Castle, the Punisher. Jonathan Storm, the Human Torch. Susan Richards, the Invisible Woman.
You're not with them?
Stand down and prepare to be apprehended.
Enemy of my enemy?
What?
Temporary truce.
Yes!
Punisher reached down for Johnny and helped him to his feet.
Final warning! Drop all weapons! Cease all unauthorized use of power!
They're not gonna go away.
Sue nodded, grim. She shrugged off her outer clothes, revealing her FF uniform below. Then, all at once, she lowered her force field.
Get us out of here.
Right.
Johnny grabbed her under the arms by her flame-proof uniform and took off toward the sky. Sue glanced down. Wilt was making a dash for the door, away from the Punisher, who stood his ground, firing off two automatic rifles at once. At the walls, not the copters, randomly kicking up dust to cover his escape.
He must have a hell of a weapons bag.
Metahumans attempting escape. Firefox 10 and 12, move to intercept.
Sue and Johnny sliced upward through the air, straight toward one of the copters. A ferocious anti-aircraft barrel protruded from its side, slowly swiveling to take a bead on them.
Johnny!
Hang on, sis.
He zigzagged through the air, executing fiery escape maneuvers. Sue struggled to maintain a force field, but it was almost impossible to concentrate under these circumstances. Then Johnny made a U-turn sickeningly fast. He reached out a hand, melting the bullets to slag in midair. Sue could barely look. Johnny shifted, still holding her beneath him, and began to soar upward.
All units, stay in pursuit. Metahumans heading uptown, straight toward teams 9 and 11.
Oh, God.
Past the night spires of New York, above the green sprawl of Central Park, Sue could see a second batch of copter lights heading straight toward them.
We're sitting ducks up here.
Sue, make us invisible, now!
She nodded and closed her eyes tight. Johnny's flame faded from view. She signaled to him that it was done, and Johnny began to drop toward the street below.
Team 9, this is Team 4. I've lost visual on metahumans. Do you have visual?
Negative, Team 4.
Engage power sensors!
Johnny and Sue landed softly on a quiet corner of Central Park West. Johnny leaned against a lamppost. Sue examined his cut face, his bruised throat.
You all right?
Yeah.
Oh, your head wound is bleeding again. That'll have to be looked at.
Great.
Sue glanced up at the sky. The copters were veering off now toward the south. They'd done it. They lost S.H.I.E.L.D. For now, at least.
Better not use my powers again. I think that's how they tracked us.
Come on.
Sue took her brother by the arm, steering him into the wooded, patchily lit park. When they were hidden from view, she dropped her invisibility shield.
Let's get to the Resistance. They'll fix you up.
Freaking Punisher. Think they got him?
I doubt it. But that is so not our problem. Not such a bad night. We saved a man from being killed.
Maybe he deserved it.
Maybe. But that's not for us to decide, is it?
Tony, I need you to understand. I just don't know if I can... No, not strong enough.
Spider-Man sat perched like a mantis in Tony Stark's workshop on the edge of the main computer bench. Before him, an array of screens blinked with a constant flow of information, including S.H.I.E.L.D. updates, superhuman dossier reports, population projections, and statuses of known alien races. The floor beyond was strewn with Tony's half-built projects, mini-reactors, engines, fuel supplies, prototype Iron Man suits of every possible color and shape. The computers had been on when Spider-Man arrived. In his haste, Tony hadn't even activated a password lock.
It's all moving too fast. Tony, can you just listen to me for a...
He reached out a metallic tentacle and tapped an icon on a screen. The file he'd accessed seemed to be a chronological record of the Avengers' cases. Next to it on the screen, a second icon read, P. Parker. He reached out a finger. He found himself watching a holographic record of his own career in reverse order. Tony's records were impressively thorough. A strange sensation ran through Spider-Man. He felt flattered, but also somehow violated. There was one final image in the file. A still picture, two-dimensional and faded. A little boy with thick glasses smiled up as a man hung a medal around his neck. The medal read, "Little Science Whiz Fair, first place." The man had gray hair, a meticulously tailored suit over his strong frame, and a stern look on his face. Spider-Man leaned forward, frowning. The boy was himself, at age 6 or so. But who was the man?
Howard Stark.
Tony's father. Peter had forgotten that award, the very first he'd ever won for science. And he'd certainly forgotten the man who gave it to him. But Tony hadn't.
Peter?
Peter quickly touched the computer screen, and the hologram vanished. Tony stood, in full Iron Man gear, at the entrance to the workshop. A curved ramp led up and out, allowing him to make quick aerial entrances and exits.
I didn't see you there, boss.
I don't remember inviting you into my workshop, Peter.
Sorry. I had to see you.
Iron Man spread his arms.
Here I am.
It won't take long. I just want to tell you I'm leaving the Avengers.
I see.
I'm really grateful to you for everything. But locking heroes up in the negative zone? Killing Bill Foster?
Thor reacted like a police officer, Peter. He was threatened, he responded with deadly force. But Bill Foster was a friend of mine. Do you really think I'm going to let something like that happen again?
No. No, not if you can help it. But you're in over your head, Tony.
What do you suggest we do with the unregistered super people? Lock them up with regular prisoners? They'd be out again in 15 minutes.
No, of course not. But do we have to lock them up at all?
Here's what you need to understand, Peter. There are forces within S.H.I.E.L.D. and more importantly within the federal government who want nothing more than to outlaw superhumans. Absolutely and completely. Now the compromise we offered them was regulating our behavior, voluntarily and according to a plan I would administer. Because there's no going back to the old days, Peter. That was never on the table.
Get out of my way, Tony.
What are you planning to do, Peter? Go on TV again? Recant your support for registration? Maybe join Captain America's band of traitors?
I'm not sure yet.
You little idiot! Do you really think you can just quit all this? Go back to your old life? Everyone knows who you are now. What will you do for money? What about Aunt May?
Aunt May is far, far away from you!
Peter's punch had dented the armor's chest plate. Pulling himself out of the shattered wall and computer debris, Tony raised his hand. The repulsor ray knocked Spider-Man to the ground.
I trusted you, Peter. I took you under my wing. I gave you everything. This is how you repay me?
Spider-Man was on his feet now, leaping and dodging, propelling himself down the wall.
Nope. This is.
Emergency passcode, Delta Delta Epsilon.
Spider-Man's armor had locked up on him in midair, his joints suddenly paralyzed. He looked around on the floor, dazed. He'd landed among an array of Iron Man helmets. Red, gold, silver, white, some with fins or extra weapon mounts. When he looked up, Tony loomed over him like Zeus looking down from Olympus.
Peter, what kind of engineer would I be to hand over a suit as powerful as yours without building in a safeguard? To make sure it couldn't be used against me, its creator. Listen, you don't have to do this. You don't have to run. You're already registered. The hard part is finished. I'm willing to forget about this little tantrum.
Passcode. Whatever a spider can.
What was that?
Spider-Man whirled on his side, almost too fast to see. He shot webbing up into Tony's face, blocking his lenses. Tony clawed at the webbing on his faceplate. It was the kind of blow that Spider-Man would only use against one of the most powerful men on Earth.
What kind of science whiz would I be not to figure out and nullify your override, boss?
Spider-Man weaved and dodged wild repulsor rays, scuttling along the wall past a freestanding equipment shelf, making his way toward the ramp that led to the emergency exit. Then the inner door burst open. A platoon of SHIELD shock troops in full body armor dashed into the room, their faces hidden by bulletproof, opaque visors. Their leader turned his head toward Tony, who was struggling to his feet, slowly burning the webbing off his face with a low-intensity repulsor ray.
Down, Mr. Stark! We got him!
As he raced up the ramp, Spider-Man had no time to dodge. His armored costume kept the bullets from penetrating, but they painfully hammered the breath out of him. He leapt through the air, twisted wildly, and fired off both web shooters at random. He jumped and bounced off the corridor walls. The bullets knocked him off balance, punching little holes in his suit, but he kept moving. It was the only way to survive.
Stop! Hold your fire!
At the end of the ramp, Spider-Man came to a large hatch, left slightly ajar after Tony's entrance. Spider-Man wrenched it open and launched himself outside. The cold night air wafted over him as he hung in midair for an instant, then reached out to cling to the outside wall of the building. He slammed the hatch shut and webbed up the seams, sealing it tight. Then he started down the side of the building toward the street far below. Get to a manhole, he told himself. If he could reach the sewers, he'd be safe. But he knew deep inside that he was kidding himself. Peter Parker would never be safe again.